If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, gamers of the world! We are the Video Gamers Podcast, hosted by three lifelong gamer dads. On Thursdays, we talk about our favorite gaming news stories over the last week, and we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about here today. I am your host, Paul, and joining me, I think he must be on Capcom's payroll, because he's been the number one defender of Dragon's Dogma 2's release issues. It's Josh.
I love microtransactions, guys. Who doesn't love giving more money to a company when you've already given them a $60 of your hard-earned money? What's a few dozen more little microtransactions?
There you go. I just love that Josh took it upon himself to fight all of Twitter single-handedly.
It's not fighting Twitter. It is stopping the spread of misinformation, guys, because there was a lot going on out there.
That was a nice political change there.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. And one of the big stories this week is that Dragon's Dogma 2 did release, although we're going to do a deep dive on it in a couple weeks. So we're not really going to be talking about that today. And then joining Josh and me, I wonder if we'll soon see a mashup of two of his favorite franchises, Skyrim and Resident Evil. It's Ryan. Oh my gosh, I was looking at Josh while I was saying that. It's Ryan. I didn't forget your name, buddy. Don't worry.
You were talking before we started recording about just replacing me with AI. So I
might have made some jokes.
I get it already. Yeah, you're just phasing me out right off the bat. I see.
I did also say we could phase all three of us out and just let AI run our podcast. And I legit think we're not that far away from that being a possibility. All right, let's jump into our first story of the week. So one game that we have not talked about in a long time is Flintlock: The Siege of Dawn. Ooh. Now, this is an open world RPG with Souls-light combat. If that name sounds familiar, we did talk about it a year and a half ago when IGN described it as Elden Ring and God of War mashed together.
What?
We said when you start throwing around monikers like that, you better be able to back it up. What's interesting is that IGN also said at the time that it was the best thing that they saw at Gamescom 2022. That was going up against stuff like Lies of P, Dune Awakening, Dead Island 2, a lot of big heavy hitter games. At the time, I actually dogged the combat Josh.
Yeah, one of us was championing the game, and then the other one was dogging the game a little bit, if you remember.
I do. I remember saying I didn't love the graphics. Yep. I thought they were a little drab, and the combat just seemed a little too dodge heavy, at least in the initial footage. Well, this week, we got a new behind-the-scenes video highlighting the combat, and I gotta say, this got me a little bit more on board.
There we go.
Josh, let's go to you since, you know, we're revisiting this topic. Was there anything here that gave you a better or worse impression about combat in Flintlock?
It gave me a lot better impression, to be honest. We joked a long time ago about, you know, I was calling this the game of the year. You were saying like, you know, there's no way. And it was just a fun little banter that we had back and forth. I'll be honest. At the time, I didn't think this game looked that great, but it did look relatively fun. Now, we got this trailer of the combat in this game, and you can definitely see why they're referencing God of War. When they say Elden Ring and God of War, I mean, that just makes my brain explode. But from what we saw, you're getting that camera movement and that camera angle and the just visceral combat, where when you're doing a fatality move, like the camera will kind of like, you know, quarter pan around so you can just see this animation play out as you just absolutely wreck something. And that is very reminiscent of God of War. So that over the top brutal combat with the finishers and the camera angles. And like I said, I'll just use that term visceral again. like, you're seeing it on display in this game. And that's not something that we really saw back when we first talked about this game, like, you know, 2 years ago. And so I really do like that part of it. They showed a lot of, like, even like a bullet time following like a musket bullet that you were shooting at somebody. Yeah. So I will say that from this trailer, which, you know, is a finely tuned and crafted trailer, it looks really good from what they're showing us.
Ryan, you love action games. You don't love dodging and rolling. So where did you end up in watching this? Did you feel like it leaned more one way or the other?
I can understand the greatness of like Elden Ring and Souls games and stuff like that. It's just not my style. I don't like that kind of setup to attack. This has that little sprinkle of it, but there's so much more. I love, because when I was watching that gameplay, I looked at it and I said, that's part of this game. That's part of this other game. And I just was listing off all these games in my head that they almost like took the best parts of all these games. Like Josh mentioned, the slow-mo bullet from like Sniper Elite. That was one of my favorite like sniper shooting games. And instantly I was like, that feature is so cool. Just sliding down the hills where you slide down and jump, a la Uncharted, Tomb Raider, Star Wars. A lot of those games have those just little tweaks, little features. And then, of course, Elden Ring, God of War, all that stuff is so cool. I loved how they were traversing through with like those jump portal things. And there's just so much of it that I thought there was enough action and enough cool spice to it to not just be, as I call it, the role simulator that Elden Ring is. But I this thing got me hyped. I think I'm on Team Josh on this one. I'm on board.
Yeah, I think we're all there now as well.
Yeah.
I did like when they said, when we're talking about Souls light combat, we're talking about increasing mobility. We're talking about having a higher pace of combat. That way it's a little bit more accessible. And I do like that, because I think there is a fine balance. I think there's a time and place where maybe you want a real hard challenge. Sometimes you just want to steamroll stuff. And sometimes you just want to be like right in the middle where it's enjoyable and fun and quick. The one thing I'm not so sure about is that they did talk about how the combat is rhythm based, and they did that to add a layer of predictability. So they said, like, for example, every 9 frames, the enemy is going to start doing an animation. That way you kind of know when to start to like parry or counter. That to me almost sounded like a little too mathematical. I'm kind of curious to see what that actually means, but I mean, there's a lot to like here. I also liked a lot of the air dodging. I like when games are really responsive to stuff like that. Like, you can do a double jump and then dodge to the side, and you know, with all the mobility along with it all, I think that all looks really interesting. It did make me think that maybe we were a little bit derelict in the fact that none of us drafted this game. I don't know when it's supposed to come out, but it did make me think maybe it should have been drafted.
It says summer of 2024. Now, mm-hmm. The problem is that that could mean early access, and then it's, you know, in early access for a year, or is it going to be an actual full release? That's one of those things they just don't clarify now a lot of times, right? So it does say summer of 2024. I think, you know, to be fair, on our list, this video just came out. And it's up until then, what we had is the old video, which, even though I was kind of semi-jokingly on board, was a little bit, yeah, you know, there's not a whole lot to get excited about. Now I think there is, because this looks good. Now, here's the weird thing. I don't know about comparing this to Elden Ring. In that regard, I feel like that's a little bit of a reach as far as trying to say, well, what's something Dark Souls, you know, that we can really get people's attention on? We'll see. This pains me to say, because you guys know how I feel about this, but this almost looks like God of War meets Forspoken in a way. Mm-hmm. And I only mean that in the traversal aspect. Like, you see your little fox friend thing that you're jumping around, and if you bounce off of him and fly up into the air, you get these like little purple mystical triangle things. And if you dash through one, then you like leap forward in a spin motion, and then you kind of do that over and over again. And Forspoken is best known for that like parkour like movement. And you get that kind of vibe from the movement in this game. And so from that aspect, I do actually see Forspoken in it a little bit. But we'll see. I don't get the Elden Ring vibe, and just like melee combat with, you know, light and heavy attacks and a dodge doesn't always mean that it's a Dark Souls-like game either.
I also just really push back when everyone's trying to compare their game to all-time greats.
Right, yeah.
Like, you see this in all things, like in sports. I remember growing up and they're like, Jerry Stackhouse is the next Jordan. And then you fast forward a few years, it's like, no, he's a very good player. He's nowhere close to Jordan. And at the time, I remember we just kept covering games and they're like, this is God of War meets this, and this is Elden Ring meets that, and this is Mass Effect meets this. It's like, all right, let's just pump the brakes. Not every game is going to be compared to Elden Ring. It's going to fall short. I felt the same thing. I'm seeing a lot more God of War DNA than I am Elden Ring. I'm not sure where the Elden Ring thing comes from at all. I will note that we're supposed to get an extended gameplay reveal next week.
I'm excited.
So maybe we'll return to this and give a more in-depth update.
I am excited because, like I said in the beginning, a two-minute curated trailer is, you know, anybody can make anything look good, right? But if you're giving us an extended gameplay look and we're going to see a solid like 10 to 15 minutes of gameplay, and maybe it's just a nice little 5-minute just in-game session or something like that, I think that'll tell a lot more of the story. I will say this game also looks fantastic. You can tell this is Unreal Engine 5 with the lighting and the resolution, and it's looking really good. Paul, has your opinion changed on the drabness?
No.
No?
I think it's fine.
I thought it was good.
Good, not great.
Yeah,
good, not great is what I would say. All right. Well, for our listeners out there, would you please help us out a bit and make sure to rate our show 5 stars and leave a written review if you have an iPhone? Also, if you've been enjoying the pod for a while, consider supporting us over on Patreon. For just $5 a month, you can sign up. Even just a month or two helps. You'll get perks like bonus episodes, shout out on the show. Go check it all out at multiplayersquad.com. All right, moving on to the next story. Larian Studios, a favorite developer of this pod, we sing their praises all the time. They shared some surprising updates, at least in my opinion, at the Game Developers Conference. The studio founder announced that there will be no DLC or expansions for Baldur's Gate 3. I don't think that's a total shock, but they said they are not going to work on a Baldur's Gate 4. And in fact, they are handing the D&D IP back to Wizards of the Coast. They are leaving D&D behind entirely to work on unrelated projects. Did this kind of surprise you guys? And how do you feel about the news? I mean, for our listeners, if they don't know, these are the people who did all the Divinity games. So like Divinity Original Sin 2, obviously Baldur's Gate 3. How do you guys feel about this?
I'm for it 100%, man. I honestly, there's nothing better that they could have done to keep my respect than to just say, listen, we made the game that we wanted to make, and we're moving on now. Like, to me, this tells me they are not chasing the money. They are not chasing any sort of deal or, you know, huge, you know, being absorbed by some massive publisher or something like that. This is, we made Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2, which were, you know, we were super passionate about. We made Baldur's Gate 3. We got to incorporate the D&D elements and working with Wizards of the Coast. We made the game that we wanted to make. It was wildly successful, and now we're going to move on. Like, that tells me that they want to keep the passion, man. Like, think about it. If they got stuck in making Baldur's Gate 4, what are they going to do? Are you going to make it like Baldur's Gate 3 and then just try to throw in a couple more things? Like, it doesn't give them that creative freedom at that point, and I like the fact that they want that, man.
I do too. I think it's so hard. Everybody's after that almighty dollar. Companies get greedy and they see an automatic check a lot of times, and then they just throw creativity and everything else at the side and just do their kind of routine to just bring in the dollars. You look at it, I mean, what would be your opinion on Marvel in like 2015? Like, they were making some dang good movies. All these, you know, the original Thors and Iron Man, all of them were great. And now you're like, what have they done in the last 5 years? It's just a bunch of garbage, because they know that they can release another superhero movie, be the same kind of format, and they'll bring in so many millions, and then they're good to go, and they just can keep turning those out. So I really respect it. I think it's a good idea. And then when they release something else, whatever they go into or venture into, people are going to want to see what it is and want to check it out, which is only going to, you know, help them.
There's definitely something to be said for it's better to leave a little bit too early than too late when you start to tarnish your reputation. At the same time, I did have to laugh a little bit at the reasons given, because the founder, and I wrote this quote down, he said that to like keep making more of the same, quote, "This is the opposite of what Larian is about. We want to do big, new things. We don't want to rehash the thing that we've done already." Well, guys, from 2002 to 2017, Larian Studios made 7 games, and they're all Divinity. It's all the Divinity series. This is exactly what they've done in the past, so I don't know if there's more to it. I don't know if the D&D licensing cost has gone up, or if there's something else at play. Maybe it's just simply the fact that Baldur's Gate 3, a lot of people are calling the game of the generation. No matter what you do after that, it's not going to live up to that. It's the same reason we'll never see Half-Life 3, right?
Yeah.
The bar is just too high. So maybe Larian is smart enough to know anything is probably going to feel like a letdown. We do have other passions, so let's move into that. Now, that kind of begs the question, right? Because Larian has never done anything other than high fantasy. It's all fantasy RPG. Is there anything in particular you would like to see Larian step out and do? I mean, they've been a little coy about all this, but they did say whatever they work on next will feel somewhat similar. So I don't think they're going to go out and make something like a 2D platformer. I mean, I think it's going to be similar within the RPG world. But what would you guys like to see them do next?
I want a cyberpunk sci-fi type game. Like, okay. Honestly, like, I mean, with the way, and when you say something similar, like, I think they're going to stick with the gameplay formula that works for them, which is like Divinity Original Sin 2 and Baldur's Gate 3.
Turn-based?
With the turn-based combat, with the multiple ways that you can approach a situation, you know, rich in-depth characters that you get to see kind of develop and affect how you know, your relationships with them as you play and all that stuff. So I think they're going to stay in that like CRPG realm. But man, if somebody could make a really just incredible sci-fi / cyberpunk futuristic RPG, man, could Larian do it. And I would absolutely love that setting. You know, I mean, can you imagine like their gameplay, but you've got disintegrators and laser pistols and teleporters, and then you've got their storytelling that they do. Now, you know, instead of like, you know, D&D races, you're dealing with like alien races and kind of all the aspects that you can just run with in that regard. Like, I could just see that being like, think about like Mass Effect, but like made like Baldur's Gate 3. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be freaking incredible, man.
That's,
I could see it.
That's kind of where my mind went too. But to be more specific, I was thinking maybe, man, maybe they could do something with Star Wars. You know,
get that license. Dude, that would be like KOTOR. That's like, you know, we talk about the KOTOR remake, but Larian Studios making a Star Wars CRPG. I'm in. Take my money.
Yeah, exactly.
People would definitely lose their minds if they did something like that. Yeah, I thought sci-fi as well, because I think it works really well for turn-based combat. I almost thought more a la Fallout. Maybe some kind of like post-apocalyptic turn-based game. Maybe something like the Wasteland series, but maybe a little bit more dark, a little bit more of a serious take on it all. Because Wasteland has some great comedy and it's all very heightened. Maybe like a more serious approach from Larian, I could see working really well. All right, well, let's go ahead and take our break, and then we'll come right back and talk about some gaming AI.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back. Now, over the last couple of years, we have talked a little bit about AI on the show. We are just regular gamers. A lot of the AI tech, admittedly, is way beyond what we even understand, you know, or to even try to take a guess as to how a lot of it works. I watched a 20-minute video yesterday from the GPU technology conference that made no sense to me about these Blackwell chips, but I do hear them say things like, when we were in the middle of the PC revolution, we were seeing 100 times computation power every 10 years. So you could expect every 10 years, 100 times the power. They said over the last 8 years, they have had a 1,000 times increase. Jeez. And they still have 2 more years to go just to hit the 10-year mark. I still don't think any of us really understands how much this is going to change gaming, let alone the world at large. But we did also watch a video that I think was a little bit more accessible to the average person. All three of us watched a video where NVIDIA showed how they are working with in-world AI. They have put together something called Covert Protocol, which is a tech demo. Essentially, it's them trying to create real humans in the digital world by using AI, basically giving them emotions, allowing them to create their own responses to things and to also animate their mouth and eyes and all of these things along the way. Did this tech demo blow you guys away at all? Did you find it boring? What were your takeaways from it?
Skynet will be here soon. That's my takeaway.
It's excited/nervous.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm excited for what it can do for what we enjoy, but not what it could turn into. I mean, there's a reason they always make all these movies where AI takes over the world and they're just, yep, let's do it, gung-ho for it. But I thought, you know, obviously I know we were talking about before we recorded all the comments about their facial expressions and stuff like that, but these are not pre-programmed. These are on the spot. AI is creating this interaction, which is just, it blows my mind. It's so crazy. And the one thing I thought about as well is, can these NPCs like interact with each other, AI to AI? Then you start getting real crazy. So I'm hyped for it, but very tentative and nervous because, you know, you just never know. I mean, once you get the ball rolling, can't unplug that.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where I don't understand AI in the implementation of it. I mean, I think we've all had our glimpses of ChatGPT and some of like Midjourney, which is the AI art. We've seen Sora, which is the AI videos, which is kind of mind-blowing. But it's like we haven't really seen this implemented in video games to a degree where people go, whoa. You know, I mean, we do see it as gamers. It is coming. And I think we do see it as gamers in the sense that I think sometimes we're not even aware of it, right? Like, you know, we just talked about hardware on our listeners question episode. And, you know, the newer NVIDIA GPUs have the DLSS, which is deep learning super sampling. And what this is doing is it's using AI to interpolate frames generated on a graphics card and then to fill those in so you get better frame rate. You know, the newest cards, the 40 series, have something called frame generation, which is literally using AI to insert frames that don't exist so that you can push 4K to like 120 frames a second. So it's like we're seeing this stuff implemented, but I think a lot of times we just go, oh, well, it's just some crazy technology. But it's AI. That's what they're using for that.
Yeah.
To get a game where the NPCs are AI generated, the responses are generated and things like that, we've seen demos, but I just don't know how it works in theory. I mean, we're all so used to NPCs in a game and running up and talking to them and they give us a couple, you know, 3 or 4 canned responses.
Repeated.
Right, yeah. Repeated.
They'll say the same thing.
And we just kind of move on. Or you get the character that follows you because they're part of a quest and so maybe they're fleshed out a little bit more. And I think, like, it's hard for me to imagine what the next iteration of that is. Sure, I can have an NPC that I can ask about the weather and the landscape and his life and his job, but how does that affect the game? Right?
Like, oh, see, that's what I'm excited about. I want to be able to play like an RPG where like I need to get past a security point and there's like a guard there. And I want to be able to say like, can I give you $500 and will you let me through? Or like, make threats or like say whatever you want, try to make an alliance. Like, oh, if you let me sneak through, can I do you a favor? And the AI of it will be able to like fill all that in.
See,
I mean, that's like where I think this is eventually going to get. When I watched this, to me, this felt like step one toward like the holodeck on Star Trek. Like it really is starting to feel that way.
That is what I'm here for, you know, like, hey, I want a Western game where I'm the villain and I want to rob banks and people have to try to stop me. And then it just goes bloop, and it makes a game, right? Yeah. Or something like that. I mean, I agree with you, Paul. Like, that would be incredible because that plays into allowing gamers to use their ingenuity and kind of like problem solving skills in that regard. I just can't fathom it. You know, that's the thing. Until we see it, it was like the Unreal Engine 5 thing, right? With the Matrix demo on the PS, was that PS4, PS5?
Where it was people, on the PS5.
Yeah, where people were like, you have to see this to believe it, man. It's photorealistic. And until you actually lay eyes on it, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. And I'm excited about it in the one sense because, man, what could that do for gaming and actually change the gaming landscape forever? But I'm also with Ryan where it's like, you know, everybody talks about Terminator, but let's remember that the Matrix, right? The whole reason we're fighting the machines is because we created them machines and they went sentient. I mean, we've just been conditioned to kind of associate a certain danger with this too, man.
AI bad, run, don't touch.
Yeah, and the tech is here. It's coming regardless.
Oh yeah.
But I kept stopping this video to try to look at the menus and all the screens and all of these various things. It's very cool because they were showing a couple examples where you go up and talk to an NPC. And they're generating vastly different responses to the player. And you see little sliders on the right where it's basically generating text, but it's also assigning different emotions to the text. So when the character says this, they are supposed to convey a certain level of sadness and a certain level of anger. And it's also, they even have a slider. And it's not that you're manually changing these things. It is saying this text should have this emotion, so this is what we're currently showing. And they even have things like how often you blink your eyes and how hard you blink your eyes. So the fact that AI is saying, okay, you're not going to have to animate any of this. We're going to generate the text. We're going to automatically animate all these facial things to match voice, which will also have inflection to match that emotion. Now, in this tech demo, it's not finished, right? Like, the voice acting is flat. The facial animations are not great. A lot of the comments, I remember just laughing. One person was like, are you kidding me? This doesn't even look as good as Starfield. But I was thinking, this is literally the same as looking at concept art before you have anything programmed. Like, someone just draws a little sketch. I think this is maybe what, like, the villain is going to look like. That's how I felt looking at this tech demo. Like, this is step one. And we're going to see stuff down the road that's just going to be so much more incredible. This got me very excited, even though it's not yet a finished product.
Of course it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're giving these tools, they're giving out the source code for free to developers. So they have said, we're going to give you guys all the tools, show us what you can do with it. And I think that's when we're going to start to see some really cool cases, you know, online as people play around and upload things. And here's how we can make NPCs feel like real people.
Sounds like something an AI would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Where's does. Paul? Now, I will say too, I don't know why, like, I think this really opens up the ability to use, and we've talked about this before, to use your microphone as an input device.
Oh, 1,000%.
You know, I mean, how many times have we said games that let you do that are very cool, but they're very few and far between. Walking up to an NPC in Dragon's Dogma 2 or, you know, Mass Effect or whatever futuristic games come out, right? And just be, instead of having to type in or pull up a dialogue and then you have three options, A, B, and C, to just literally say, hey, I'm looking for this person. Have you seen them? And then be like, you know, I haven't, but Mary works in the inn. She might be a better person to ask. And then you go to the inn and you're like, hey, Mary, Bob sent me. He said, you might know about John. Have you seen John anywhere? And then, like, to just be able to interact with our games in that sense as well. Oh, man, that would be super cool, in my opinion.
Oh, if they only talked that way in Dragon's Dogma.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Yeah. We're not far away where there will be no dialogue wheels, no preset decisions. You'll just say whatever you want and the game will be able to work within it. It's going to be great. Josh, we're going to be robbing banks.
I'm going to need a soundproof yelling. Room because my wife's going to be like, I heard you yelling at that NPC in there. You know?
we're here for the bank's money, not your money. Your money's insured by the U.S. government. You know, I want to get my heat on and able to live it out. All right, let's move on to our last story of the week. I know we're kind of quickly running out of time here. All right, Resident Evil. We're all big fans, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep,
I think so. Well, you know, it's been speculated that Resident Evil 9 will launch in 2025. There have been some claims. We don't know exactly for sure, but supposedly it's been in development since 2018, and it has the biggest budget Resident Evil has ever had for a single title. Well, this week, Dusk Golem, a reputable leaker, said that Dragon's Dogma 2 took the Resident Evil engine and expanded it for open world, and that Resident Evil 9 will continue building on this tech, which to me really heavily implies Resident Evil 9 could be open world. I'm very curious to hear how you guys would feel about that if it were to be the case.
I'm so scared. I'm already scared.
I was going to say that makes me afraid.
You think like walking through like your kind of semi-guided path and you go things and zombies pop out and jump scares scare you now? You're just in this wide open world traversing through it and you just go upon this just, you know, nice looking building. And then there's more zombies in there too. I can already feel myself jump at the jump scares, just losing my mind. I'm excited though. I think it's going to be, I know everybody's, you know, kind of the trend, you know, let's all go open world. Let's all do this. Let's all do that. You know, they kind of follow the hotness of the time, but not everything's meant to be open world, but I would like to see this. I think it would be really neat if they do that. And I'm for it.
I'm worried, to be honest. Resident Evil games have always been about that kind of crafted experience and the, you know, being able to invoke fear and tension when they want to, and these cool areas that you're kind of forced into. Resident Evil Village, we saw that with, you know, the monster baby being down in that weird mannequin's house thing, and just some of the locales, Castle Demetresque and things like that. I think it makes the game infinitely harder for them to make atmospheric and create those moments that we remember if it's open world. And we have said this many, many times, not every game needs to be open world. Give me a good experience, right? And it's hard to do that with an open world. It's not that it can't be done. It's just people don't put in the effort to make it the right way, right? We've seen some games, Witcher 3, phenomenal, huge open world, tons of stuff to do. And then we've seen it backfire. I'll mention Forspoken, not to dig on that game, huge open world, not a whole lot to do, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, it's one of those where it can really go right if you take the time to do it. And it can really go wrong if you just try to throw in, hey, we're an open world now, we had no idea what we were doing to make this fun. And so I get real worried when I see a game that has a history of being great, being a crafted experience, being linear for the most part. And that's perfectly fine. They're great games. You're messing with the formula in a way that you've never done before. And it just makes me worry, man. I'm not sure they can pull it off or what it means to them when they say we're going open world.
It would be a bold move for sure. Like, that's a swing for the fences. That's a pretty big departure from the old Resident Evil formula. I will say I would be extremely curious to see how they might work it out, because if it could work, it would be a lot of fun. The one thing that I would draw as an example of this is the fact that Capcom did do the Dead Rising games, and those are open world with zombies. And granted, that's a little bit more arcade style action, but those games are a lot of fun. So if you're looking to make a scarier, darker, grittier version of that, I can kind of picture it. I think the key thing would just making it not too big of a world. I mean, Resident Evil Village is almost open world-ish within the village, and to me that makes a lot of sense. If you're gonna try to make like the size of San Andreas for Resident Evil, that wouldn't make any sense at all, right? So I feel like if you had the right context, maybe it would work. But I do also feel like they're a little late. Like, Assassin's Creed tried this, and then they've already gone back, right? So I almost feel like Capcom might be, you know, 5 or 8 years too late on giving this a shot.
Yeah, have you guys heard about Bitcoin?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I love Resident Evil. Whatever it is, we'll all buy it.
Yeah.
I just don't Hopefully know how they're is it you go from one city to the next, you know, looking for, you know, some creepy thing, and you got to go to this city to get some cure for this city over here that's got a bunch of plague-ridden people. I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to pull it off. Is it going to wind up looking like an Ubisoft game at that point? Because gross, you know, or how are they going to keep the Resident
Live
Evil
service.
Feel? Yeah, exactly. There's so many pitfalls that they could run into. It puts me way more in the skeptical field than it does like the excited field. Now, if they nail it, okay, you've just elevated the series to a whole new level. I'm skeptical, man.
And these open world games take so much longer to make. Like, maybe that's why we're getting this bigger gap than we normally get with Resident Evil. So that's also a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, I just like you guys said, open world does not automatically dictate huge world. So if they can make it where it's open, you can still kind of craft your own story through these areas and have your own experiences. But it's not just a big, open, vast area that has a bunch of just emptiness. You know, that's the part of Resident Evil. There could be a zombie around every single corner. And so if they kind of tighten it up to where you can still go around, but you never know what's there and it's not too crazy in size, I at least I hope that they can do something with this, because I think that would be neat. But fingers crossed.
Yeah, I just loved Resident Evil Village so much.
Yeah.
I just can't wait for the next entry, because that one was just such a blast. All right, well, that wraps everything up here for This Week in Gaming. Please make sure to rate our show 5 stars. You can toss us a follow on socials at Video Gamers Pod, and check out Patreon support options at multiplayersquad.com. Make sure you follow our podcast so you don't miss any content, and come back Monday for our next bonus round episode. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Until next time, happy gaming.
See ya.
All right, see everybody.